it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 332. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, I'm going to recap the 2019 World Series, and what a World Series it was. I hope a lot of you guys were watching. Some pretty outstanding action here in the Fall Classic, especially in Game 6 and 7. We're going to talk about the fact the Phillies have made a big hire after signing Joe Girardi to the three-year deal. The Phillies have a new pitching coach. We'll tell you who it is. We'll also look ahead at the Phillies offseason. A lot of big decisions coming up. I'm going to do all that with Philadelphia Phillies beat writer for the Inquirer, Matt Breen. He's going to join us in just a couple minutes to talk about all three of those things. Plus, I will have your stat of the week. Just a reminder, folks, to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon, where we have some bonus content there for you. Lots of different video things, lots of different audio items for you, and some written content as well. Make sure you go to patreon.com/hittin'season to check it all out, and tell a friend about the Good Fight podcast feed and have them subscribe, rate, and review what we do on Apple Podcasts. All right, let's talk about the 2019 World Series. And this might have been the most bizarre World Series in Major League Baseball history. I know Jason Stark in his piece for The Athletic, a very, very good piece, by the way, makes a case that this is perhaps a miracle World Series win by the Washington Nationals, because when you look at some of the data, when you look at what the Houston Astros were in the regular season, it's pretty hard to not call them something equivalent to the 1927 Yankees. I mean, the numbers kind of bear that out. During the course of the regular season, the pitching staff had an adjusted ERA plus of 127. This is from Jason's piece, by the way. Their offense had an adjusted OPS plus of 119. Over the last 100 years, there's only been one other team that had both an OPS plus and ERA plus of 119 or higher. That team was the 1927 Yankees. So only two teams in history ever had as large a win differential total over the team they played in the World Series and didn't win it. One was in 1954, where the Indians lost to the New York Giants, and then the other was in the 1906 World Series, where the Cubs lost to the White Sox. I mean, this is one of those, and if you look just at the betting odds, this is the third largest upset in World Series history. Only the 1990 Reds beating the Athletics, and in 1946, the Cardinals beating the Red Sox were their bigger Vegas upsets than the Nationals beating the Houston Astros in seven games. And Washington, D.C. now has its first world championship since 1924. I still find the fact that the Nationals played in five elimination games, found themselves behind in each one of those elimination games, and won each of those five elimination games. And that includes the National League Championship Series, in which they swept the St. Louis Cardinals. I mean, they didn't even face a tough game against St. Louis in that series. So the fact that they had that many games in the wild card game, the National League Division Series, and the World Series, five different elimination games, just tells you how crazy those different series were. Also tells you that no team did what the Nationals did when they were 19-31, 50 games into the season. On May 24th, the Nats were 19-31, 12 games under, in fourth place, 10 games behind the first place Phillies. They're the second team in Major League history to win the World Series after being at least 12 games below 500. The 1914 Braves were the other, but you know, no team had done it at that point in the season. I mean, they were 50 games in. The 1914 Braves were not 50 games into the season when they were 12 games under. To put it in kind of a, you know, put it into some context here, on May 23rd, the Nats were 12 games under 500, which was the same record as the Detroit Tigers. The Tigers went on to lose 114 games. The Nationals went on to win the World Series. They are the first team in big league history to win three winner-take-all games in a single postseason. For the first time in World Series history, the road team won every single game. Home teams are now, by the way, and this is a shocking statistic. Home teams are now 57-61. That's 4 games under 500 in winner-take-all postseason games all time. And in the last 4 World Series Game 7s, the road team has won them all. The 2019 Nationals, the 2017 Astros at the Dodgers, the 2016 Cubs at Cleveland, and the 2014 Giants at Kansas City. And think about, I still marvel at how they did it. They trailed by 2 runs in the 8th inning against Josh Hader in the wild card game. They trailed by 2 runs in the 8th inning against Clayton Kershaw in Game 5 of the NLDS. They trailed by 2 against Zach Greinke in the 7th inning of Game 7 of the World Series when they had just 1 hit and 1 walk. I mean, that's just unbelievable. Just an unbelievable series. And before Anthony Rendon arrived at home plate in the 7th inning, just 2 of 20 Nationals to hit in that game reached base. By the time Rendon came to bat in the 9th, 12 of the next 18 had reached base. One of the all-time rallies by a team to close the World Series. In this series, the road teams scored 49 runs, while the home teams scored 14. You talk about playing tight in front of your home crowd. Only the 8th team in history to win Games 6 and 7 on the road were the Nationals. What Washington did was just insane. They were just the 2nd team to face 2 teams in the postseason that won 105 or more regular season games. The other was the 98 Padres. The Nationals, unlike the Padres, are the first team to do that and beat both of those teams. I mean, you think about the teams that the Nationals beat. The Dodgers, who were supposed to be impregnable, unbeatable, and the Astros, again, the 3rd biggest upset in World Series history. Steven Strasburg, by the way, what a performance in this game, the World Series MVP, in Game 6, and earlier in the series in Game 2, he was the World Series MVP. He's the first number 1 overall pick ever to win World Series MVP, and just the 3rd top 2 pick to win the award. Strasburg is the 3rd pitcher in big league history to win 5 games in a single postseason, and the first to do it without a loss. Washington was 10-0 in games started by Max Scherzer and Strasburg during the playoffs, the best team record in games started by any duo in a single postseason in big league history. Now, of course, the Nationals did a lot to win this series, but did the Astros lose this series as much as the Nationals won it? That, I think, goes a little bit too far. I think you've got to give credit to the Nationals for what they did here. But there were questions about what happened in Game 7. And, of course, the big one is, did A.J. Hinch pull Zach Greinke at the wrong time? Remember, Anthony Rendon gives up the one-out home run in the 7th inning. And to that point, he'd only given up a single and a walk. So Anthony Rendon takes him deep to left field, turning a 2-0 game into a 2-1 game. And frankly, if you're going to hang the Game 7 loss on anybody, you've got to hang it on the Houston offense for not cashing in one of those runners in scoring position innings and not getting more than 2 runs off of Max Scherzer, who was clearly just hanging on by his fingernails in that game. I don't know how he managed to keep Houston to 2 runs in that game, but he figured out a way to do it. But it's on the Houston offense for not being able to figure out how to score more runs against Max Scherzer and the Nationals in that game. By the time Patrick Corbin came in, he shut everybody down for 3 innings. So the question on the other side with A.J. Hinch is, did he take out Zach Greinke too early? Because Greinke gives up the 1-out home run to make it 2-1. Then he walks Juan Soto. Frankly, you know, Zach Greinke got hosed on a 2-1 count, and there was a pitch that should have gone a 2-2. Instead, it went to 3-1, and then he loses Soto on the next pitch. And out comes A.J. Hinch. And he only had about 70 pitches thrown at that point. I mean, someone who was kind of actively rooting for the Nationals to win this series, I was relieved when they came out to get Greinke. I would have been relieved to see them put Gerrit Cole in at that point. You know, I mean, that's how good Greinke was throwing. The Nationals hitters just didn't seem to have a chance, but Hinch was terrified of Greinke facing that team a 3rd time through the order. And I love Hinch. I think Hinch is the best manager in baseball, but I think he went out and he got Greinke at the right time. I really do. I think it looked like Greinke might be starting to fall apart a little bit. And Will Smith came in, and Howie Kendrick somehow hit that opposite field home run off the right field foul pole. You know what that home run reminded me a lot of? Reminded me a lot of the Juan Uribe home run in Game 6 of the 2010 National League Championship Series that he hit off Ryan Madsen. The game was 2-2, and he reached out and poked a ball, and it just seemed like it was going to be a fly out to the right fielder, and the ball just kept carrying and carrying and carrying and went out and gave the team a 3-2 lead. That's what Howie Kendrick's home run reminded me of. Gave the Nationals a shocking 3-2 lead there in the seventh inning, and then the Nats would add a couple more in the eighth and a couple more in the ninth. But I think it was just I think A.J. Hinch made the right move there. It is interesting that he didn't bring in Gerrit Cole in that situation, but for whatever reason, it seems like they were really terrified of having Gerrit Cole come into the middle of an inning, that they were dead set on him starting an inning. Now, why he didn't pitch the eighth inning, I'm not sure about, because the Nationals did get a couple of runs in the eighth inning, turning a 3-2, one run in the eighth inning, turning a 3-2 lead into a 4-2 lead. I'm not sure why Gerrit Cole didn't start that inning, at least. Not starting the ninth inning. Again, the Nationals got two more in the ninth. You could have started Gerrit Cole in that inning, but by that point, he'd already been up a couple of times, and it just seemed like that the moment had come and gone for Gerrit Cole to be used. But I would have used Gerrit Cole in play. You know, when I took out Zach Greinke, I would have put Cole in right there, but I don't necessarily think removing Greinke was the wrong move. We don't know how Greinke was going to fare from that point in the game. We just know how Will Smith did fare, and it wasn't right. But I'm not going to kill A.J. Hinch for that call. I think he did the right thing pulling Zach Greinke in that spot. I don't fault him for that move at all, because, you know, Greinke hadn't pitched all that effectively in Game 3. And, you know, the Astros had won that game, but the Nationals had a ton of scoring opportunities in that game. And, you know, maybe Greinke was starting to lose it a little bit there. I mean, he knows his pitchers better than I do. And I was watching Greinke, and I thought, you know, yeah, please pull him. Because to that point, the Nationals hadn't done anything other than the home run and the walk. But, you know, they'd gotten a little bit of momentum there. And I can't say that I disagreed with his decision to pull Greinke at the time. Juan Soto, Anthony Rendon, Howie Kendrick all hugely clutch in the series. Players age 21 or younger with 7 RBI in a single World Series, there have been two players that did it. Juan Soto and Mickey Mantle in 1953. Pretty good company. Anthony Rendon homered in each of the last three games in which the Nationals were facing elimination. He's the first player ever to homer in three straight elimination games in a single postseason. And Kendrick is the only player in big league history with multiple career go-ahead home runs in the seventh inning or later of a winner-take-all game. Kendrick hit both of his in this postseason. The other was in the National League Division Series in Game 5. Of course, we're talking about the Grand Slam. Adam Eaton's contributions, I think, also shouldn't be ignored. He had a terrific World Series, as did Patrick Corbin. Yes, I would have gone 6 years for Patrick Corbin, as you have heard me say numerous times. And the general impression that I am left with watching the Washington Nationals win the World Series is that the 2019 Nationals are what the 2011 Phillies should have been. This is what the Phillies should have done in 2011. Now, the Phillies won the division. They were a 102-win team. They were the favorites to go all the way that season. But you look at the Phillies had an older lineup in 2011. By that point, Jimmy Rollins was on the other side of his career. Chase Utley was. Ryan Howard was. Shane Victorino was by that point. I mean, Raul Labanez was there. The Phillies were one of the oldest teams in baseball. The Nationals were the oldest team in baseball. But the Nationals were a wild card team. The Phillies were a 102-win team. And so there was a difference there in expectation. But when you look at the makeup of these two teams, what these two teams were, both teams had tremendous starting pitching. Roy Halladay, Cliff Lee, and Cole Hamels and Roy Oswalt were supposed to do what national starters did in these playoffs. What Halladay and Lee, what Strasburg and Scherzer did is what Halladay and Lee were supposed to do for the Phillies in 2011. It didn't work out that way. But that 2011 Phillies team had an older position player roster that did enough to score runs and win baseball games, and they were led by a dominant starting rotation that in the playoffs just wasn't all that dominant. You know, Cliff Lee blew a 4-0 lead in Game 2 of that series. Roy Halladay pitched his butt off in that Game 5, but at the end of the day, they got shut out by Chris Carpenter. In the Rally Squirrel game, Roy Oswalt got out-dueled by, what was it, Edwin Jackson, who started that game? That's the whole reason you got Roy Oswalt was to win that game. It just didn't happen. But the 2019 Nationals, that was the path that the 2011 Phillies should have taken. It's just the Nationals won their Game 5. They won their Game 5 against the Nationals, and the Phillies lost their Game 5 to a huge underdog in the St. Louis Cardinals. Of course, the Cardinals would go on to win the 2011 World Series, a World Series I still contend the Phillies should have won. They would have, in order to win that series, they would have had to go the route the 19 Nationals did. Just so many parallels between those two teams. The 2019 Nationals are what the 2011 Phillies should have been. All right, one last thing before we get to Matt Breen. The Phillies did announce that Brian Price is going to be their pitching coach. We talked about this on Sunday night. I think this is probably the worst-kept secret among the Phillies staff. When Joe Girardi was picked to manage Team USA in pre-Olympic qualifying, that was set to begin this weekend, Brian Price resigned from that gig because it certainly looked like he was going to get the Phillies managerial job. So there's a connection there between Girardi and Brian Price. Price pitched five seasons in the minor leagues and then spent 10 years coaching in Seattle's minor leagues. He reached the majors in 2000 and was the Mariners pitching coach for six seasons and had a lot of success there. Went to the Diamondbacks in 2006 for four seasons and then was the Reds pitching coach for 4 years before becoming their manager in 2013, though. So a lot of experience, a lot of good experience, turning good young pitchers around, really figuring out how to get the most out of young pitchers. That was his specialty. And man, does this team need that. Cincinnati's pitching staff ranked third and fourth in the National League ERA in Price's final 2 years there in 2012 and 13. His Diamondback staff in 2007 and 8 posted the National League's fourth best ERA, and his Mariner staff in 2001 finished with the best mark in the American League. And so you look at guys like Nick Pivetta, Zach Eflin, or Vince Velasquez. One of those guys is probably sticking around in the rotation, but which one? Should it be Pivetta? And I've been asking this question to myself after that Athletic piece, which told us a lot about the issue the Phillies had with their analytics, with Gabe Kapler giving pitchers a separate set of analytics and instruction, and all the confusion that went on and all the confusion that caused. How badly did that mess up Pivetta, who clearly has the best stuff of the three of them? Were the problems so bad with the analytics and Kapler devising his own game plans, confusing pitchers? Was it so bad that it had a drastic effect on Pivetta, who clear? I mean, if it did, would it be stupid of the Phillies to throw Pivetta away based on what he did last season if so much of that was not his fault? I mean, do we want to give up on a guy with that kind of stuff? Send him packing to the Houston Astros or someplace else and watch them unlock his potential? I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens during the offseason, whether or not Pivetta is moved someplace like Houston, or whether he sticks around and Brian Price gets his hands on him in spring training, and you know we see a breakout Nick Pivetta-type performance in the spring. We're not going to be able to believe it, because we saw Nick Pivetta have a breakout spring this year, and it didn't translate in the regular season, but it's just something to consider. I think Zach Eflin is most likely going to be, of the three young pitchers, the one guy to stick in the rotation, but you never know. And I think Brian Price is the right guy to take on the job. So we are going to talk a little bit more about Brian Price as the guy for the Phillies pitching coach job with Matt Breen, and we're going to talk to him about the World Series and his ideas on who the next hitting coach could be and the Phillies' plans for the offseason. We'll do that next right here on Hittin' Season. And joining me to talk a little bit about the World Series, Joe Girardi and the Phillies' upcoming offseason, is Phillies beat writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Matt Breen. You can, of course, follow Matt on Twitter. You're probably already doing that. But if you're not, it's @Matt_Breen. Matt, thanks for coming back on Hittin' Season. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, John. Thanks for having me on.
Let's start off talking about the World Series, because with the Washington Nationals, a division rival, finally breaking through and winning it all in pretty incredible fashion, I know a lot of Phillies fans were not rooting for this outcome, but living here in the Washington, D.C. area, I've mentioned it a number of times, my oldest son is a monster Nationals fan, so he had quite a good night last night, and I was enjoying watching him go along for the ride. But as someone who grew up in Philadelphia, obviously, and rooted for the Phillies as a kid growing up, what was your take on the Nationals winning the World Series last night?
I just thought the whole series was fun. It was an enjoyable series. And for the playoffs, that's what I try to – I always hope that it's just enjoyable. You watch the Phillies all year. You don't get to watch as much, you know, around the league as you would wish. So every October, since I've been on the beat, the Phillies haven't been in the playoffs. So I just try to hope that it's enjoyable. And this playoffs definitely was. The World Series was great. The only tired narrative is the Bryce Harper – like, every time the Nationals did something this October, it seemed like there was tweets, oh, how's Bryce Harper feeling? And it's like, who cares? Enjoy your World Series. Enjoy that. Let Bryce Harper go. You won the World Series.
Yeah, I saw somebody tweeted it out, and I don't have the tweet in front of me, so I apologize. I'm gonna crib this without you know, I'll give the credit here. I'll find it. But they basically asked, how's Bryce Harper doing right now? Well, he's probably really happy for his friends, and he's got $300 million, and he's not a monster. So, you know, he's probably very happy for the guys in that clubhouse who, you know, managed to do something that they weren't able to do while he was there, and you know, it didn't have anything to do with him. That this Nationals team really had some kind of resiliency that they hadn't had before, and frankly, the starting pitching finally performed for them in a way that they'd expected in the previous seasons, in which they weren't able to get it done. But the way they won, Matt, with the five elimination games and Steven Strasburg pitching the way he did in the postseason, I don't think Steven Strasburg has those kinds of performances in past seasons.
No, and it also goes into that they had three pitchers this year and not two. So it's a big difference. When you can go into especially a five-game series with three studs like that, that's a big difference. Strasburg was great. Patrick Corbin, how the bullpen was just excellent. Remind you of Charlie Morton a lot. And then, like, fringe guys like Howie Kendrick, those are the kind of moves that get you a World Series. That when you acquired Howie Kendrick 2 years ago, the Nationals didn't expect this to be that, but that's what happens. You look at the 08 Phillies and the kind of the fringe guys that we all talk about and remember, that's what Howie Kendrick is to this Nationals team.
Yeah, and as Drubal Cabrera, too, two former Phillies, and as we remember Cabrera just washing out with the Phillies while he was here in August and September last year, but he was a fantastic addition for the Nationals in the middle of that lineup.
No doubt, and it's a guy that you they're like the on-the-margins additions during the season that you're not banking on big dividends, but that's next thing you know, in October, that's who you're counting on. Because like you really need 25 guys to win a World Series, and I think the Nationals prove that.
So the Nationals win the World Series with all the games, all the road teams winning this World Series, which again is just absolutely bonkers that it went down this way. But the Nationals went into the postseason as a wild card team. They almost lost to the Brewers. The Brewers were four outs away with the best reliever in the game on the mound from beating the Nationals. So, I mean, I wonder if you think the Phillies will look at the wild card a little bit less like a redheaded stepchild moving forward because of this. Because, I mean, yes, then I think the Nationals were better than the Phillies this year, but the Brewers were just four outs away from getting past the Nationals, and that run might never have happened.
Yeah, honestly, the Nationals should have lost that game, but I remember watching that game and trying to place myself as a Milwaukee Brewer fan and thinking, like, this must be the most gut-wrenching loss of your life. I thought that was, you know, and people forget about that game now. I forgot about it until you brought it up, but that was absolutely brutal for them. But yeah, it's so, and trust me, I want to hammer Andy McPhail for the if we don't, we don't quote now. But when you watch October and you watched these teams playing the playoffs, the Phillies were nowhere near these teams. This was not the baseball we watched all season. It's a different brand of teams. There was a different level. The Phillies had no interest in winning the wild card. I don't even think they would have won the wild card anyway. They were more than a move away. But that does not mean that you don't try to win the wild card when you're in contention at the trade deadline. So I'm not excusing them for what they did. But I think, like the Bryce Harper narrative is tired, I saw stuff last night about, oh, well, the Phillies should have went for the wild card. Look at the Nationals. It's like, they're not equal parts. This is not the same thing. Yeah. They're totally different. The Nationals are an awesome baseball team. The Phillies last year were not.
Yeah, the Nationals were every bit the equal of the Dodgers. I mean, you look at the record starting at the end of May, the Nationals had a better record than the Dodgers did. They won 20 out of their last 25, starting with the five-game sweep of the Phillies, so you're right. I just look at it from the Brewers' perspective. I do think the Phillies were close to where the Brewers were. The Brewers they got hot at the end of the season after Yelich went out, but you know, up until those last 2 weeks, those two teams were virtually identical, and so if they make improvements, I wonder if their approach at future trade deadlines, if they're looking like they have the pieces, but just might be in the wild card hunt, whether or not they would be more aggressive. But no, you're right. It definitely is kind of a narrative that Phillies fans are kind of spinning. See, this is why you go for the wild card. You know, so I guess, too, you know, we saw a bunch of guys in this World Series that are going to be free agents. Anthony Rendon, Steven Strasburg from the Nationals. You've got Gerrit Cole from the Astros, who are all going to be free agents. And obviously, there are a lot of names that the Phillies are going to be connected to here over the next couple of months. Obviously, these guys help themselves by their performance in the postseason. I just wonder what you think the likelihood is of the Phillies landing any of these three guys. To me, it seems more on the remote side than likely.
I tend to say that it's very likely that they come away with one of those. If all three of them, let's say Steven Strasburg's a free agent. I think if all three hit the market, the Phillies end up with one of them. They need.
I like it.
Positions, starting pitcher and third base, obviously we know are positions of need right now for the Phillies. And if you watched Gerrit Cole's press conference last night, you saw the Scott Boras hat. And
oh, yeah, he's out.
Yeah, and he's out. He's out of Houston, and you've seen that Scott Boras hat a lot around the Phillies clubhouse the last few seasons. I know there's everybody saying he wants to go out west and play for a West Coast team. But so did Bryce Harper. Manny Machado should be on the Yankees right now. Patrick Corbin should have pitched for the Yankees this year. But money talks. These guys are professional athletes. They play to get paid. They're, you know, that's what this game is all about. And the Phillies have a ton of money to spend. They're willing to spend a lot of money. It was told at the end of, towards the end of the season that the Phillies are anticipating to spend big again. Maybe it's not going to be as big as it was last winter, because half a billion dollars, is tough to meet. Yeah. But they're going to spend, and I would be shocked if they get outbid if Strasburg is a legit free agent. Like, he's not just opting out to renegotiate with the Nationals.
Renegotiate.
But if he's a legit free agent, Cole's obviously is a free agent, they will not get outbid for both of those players.
I think the Nationals showed with their philosophy last offseason that they understood that investing in starting pitching, which is what baseball has been all about throughout most of its history, with the exception of the last 5 or 6 years where bullpenning has really become a big thing. The Nationals invested not in Bryce Harper this past offseason, but in Patrick Corbin. And like you mentioned, having three starters was so important in this postseason for them to be able to go on this run. I'm wondering if the price tag, though, you know, I mean, if Ken Rosenthal made the argument for Gerrit Cole as the first $300 million pitcher, like an 8-year, $300 million deal. I saw somewhere Steven Strasburg may have earned himself a 7-year deal over $200 million. Are those deals too rich for your liking, or do you think they would be too rich for the Phillies' liking?
It sounds like a lot of money, and if that's the deal, you're not going to get that return. Just like you're not going to get the 13 years of Bryce Harper's contract. It's just, but you're paying the premium for the first 5 or 6 years, you know, whatever that is. You're paying for the prime years. But again, with that total, I don't think that's accurate. I think that's what we say now in October. And then when this whole process drags out, and just like we saw with Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, that they didn't get the $500 million or whatever it was estimated that they were going to get. I think these deals, in for us that aren't billionaire owners, that's what we would pay them with our fake money. But then when a push comes to shove, I think it'll be a little bit more, it'll be an easier to swallow number. But the thing, it's not the price, it's the years that I think, if you look back at Patrick Corbin, like the Phillies were scared away from a 6-year last year. And do you think the Nationals care about that 6-year right now?
Nope.
So that's what I think Matt Klentak is going to have to get over, and I think he will. because you saw what Patrick Corbin did this year for the Nationals. You see how important, like you said, starting pitching is. And it's okay. If the market for Gerrit Cole is 6 years and you have to give him that seventh year just to get him, then just give him the seventh year. And I think Matt Klentak will change his outlook on that this offseason.
That's where I was on Corbin last year. Everybody seemed fine with giving him 5 years, and I was like, okay, if you're willing to go five, why not give him the sixth year, just if that's gonna get him here? But obviously, that was a bridge too far for the Phillies. We'll see if they make a similar decision. I think you're right, though. So, Matt, the Phillies have decided on who's going to be their next pitching coach, and you talked a lot about that in a report for the Philadelphia Inquirer. What did you write?
Yes, Brian Price, former Reds manager who we all remember from his tirade a couple years ago. That's when you, like, I just knew him as that guy. I was like, Brian Price,
yeah,
that's
legendary.
Yeah, but here he's had a really successful background as a pitching coach for going back to 2000 with the Mariners. Mariners, Diamondbacks, Reds, pitching coach, all had success at each stop. Managed a few years with the Reds. Was a minor league pitching coach for a decade with the Mariners. Pitched in the minor leagues. And to me, I think it's a safe bet. It's a guy that, you know, has a background in this, has done this before, knows what he's doing, and has gotten a lot out of staffs that weren't amazing pitching staffs. It's not like he was the pitching staff of the Washington Nationals this year. And you can talk about how good their starting rotation is, but he worked with staffs that were similar to what the Phillies have right now, which is not great. Not an excellent staff, something that you need a coach to maybe get that extra value out of him. And I think that's what he's done in his career. And also, he's familiar with Joe Girardi. He was Joe Girardi's pitching coach on Team USA. He appointed him last summer. Obviously, both of them, well, Joe's not going, and it sounds like Brian Price is not going to be on Team USA anymore either if he comes to the Phillies. So he knows him. He's got background as a major league pitching coach, good experience, and a good experience with what the Phillies need right now.
Any word on, we're hearing a lot about the pitching coach, but there hasn't been a lot of conversation about the hitting coach as of yet. Are there any embers burning there, or is it kind of a little bit quiet on that front?
Yeah, I think they wanted to take care of the pitching coach first and before they went to the hitting coach, and that seems quiet. Just names to throw. It's really just throwing around names right now, trying to connect the dots. Like Dante Bichette was the hitting coach for the Rockies in 2013. They had it's Colorado, so you don't know what's true, but they had an excellent offensive season that year, led the league in slugging percentage, and were, I think, fourth in OPS. And he's best friends with Joe Girardi. Joe Girardi's son is named Dante, named after Dante Bichette. They played together with the Rockies in the 90s. So there's that kinship. Plus, it's not just like he's appointing his buddy. You know, the guy has a background in hitting as a player. Obviously, you know, one of the great hitters in the 90s, and then was a hitting coach at least for a year. And his sons are in the big league. So I'm thinking about that last night. That He probably is up to date on all the analytics and just the new ways of teaching, because he's watched his sons, especially one of them, play with the Yankees. So he went through one of the most cutting edge farm systems in baseball. And then his other son, Bo, is now a stud with the Blue Jays. So he's around the game. You're not bringing like a fossil in who doesn't know what he's talking about. I think this is a guy that has been around the game for the last 6 years since he stopped being a hitting coach.
Last question for you. You were at the news conference with Joe Girardi and Matt Klentak. Obviously, a much more upbeat press conference this second time after the disaster of the one a couple of weeks ago. What was your impression of Joe Girardi at the news conference, and how different are things going to be in the Phillies clubhouse this year with him?
I was impressed. It was obviously, we watched Joe Girardi from afar for his 10 years with the Yankees, but I was never up close to Joe Girardi, never talked to Joe Girardi, didn't watch a ton of Joe Girardi press conferences besides what you see on MLB Network or SportsCenter. But I was impressed. I thought he said all the right things, came across as, I hate to say it, because I think when you say someone's authentic, you don't need to say someone's authentic if they're authentic. But he came across as someone who was comfortable in that seat and wasn't saying things to win over the crowd or to win over the fans watching at home. I think he was just – he's Joe Girardi. He's his own person, and I think he's someone that – as of now, I mean, they haven't played a game yet, so who knows how he's going to be as a manager. But right now, they hired the right guy, and I think he's the right guy to take this team to the next step. Gabe Kapler, for all of his faults, he did introduce a lot of – he brought analytics to the forefront of this team, which they needed. If you go back 3 years ago, analytics is like a foreign subject in that clubhouse. Gabe Kapler kind of helped usher that in. So now I think you need a manager who's going to also balance analytics and just old school game calling. And that's what Joe Girardi is. And there's going to be like accountability structure. You always come back to that. It's so crazy thinking about it now, but that Cesar Hernandez moment from this summer when he was benched, but not really benched. But he was benched. It was just like, is he benched or not benched? That's not going to happen this year. There's going to be real accountability from the manager to the clubhouse, and the clubhouse is going to understand that. It's going to be a normal baseball clubhouse, not like this incubator thing where every man is their own person. And I think it'll be all right.
Yeah. Well, I think it's you can only go up from here, and it should be a pretty interesting offseason to see how the Phillies go about addressing a lot of their needs. Folks, make sure you are reading everything Matt Breen is writing for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and make sure you're following him on Twitter @Matt_Breen. Matt, thanks so much for coming on Hitting Season. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, John. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, coming up, the Phillies offseason now begins, and we'll get into what the Phillies have in store coming up here over the next couple of months. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So now that the Phillies, they still have to hire a hitting coach, as you heard Matt and I talking about just a minute ago. But for the most part, most of the coaching staff has been decided. The Phillies did lose someone from their staff. The Padres are expected to hire Phillies infield coach Bobby Dickerson as their bench coach. And the Phillies infield was much better this season. So Dickerson gets credit for turning around what was the worst by far defense in baseball in 2018 to a unit that was pretty average in 2019. And trust me when I tell you, with the personnel the Phillies had, that was a massive improvement. So not hard to see why Dickerson might be moving on to San Diego to be the bench coach for the Padres. So let's talk a little bit about what could be coming up here this offseason for the Phillies. And you heard me talk to Matt just about the options. And I like that he seems optimistic that the Phillies are going to get one of Garrett Cole, Steven Strasburg, or Zach Wheeler. The price tags do scare me just a little bit because the World Series, I think, certainly upped the price tag for the three biggest targets the Phillies will have this winter. Cole, Strasburg, Rendon all showed they're not only great regular season players, but they are among the very best players the game has ever seen in the postseason. So the Phillies, we know, are going to go after starting pitching. They have to go after starting pitching. They absolutely need it. But what would you prefer? I asked this question on Twitter because the price tag matters. And Ken Rosenthal reported, and I guess, I don't know if he's hearing this from baseball executives, but he's hearing that Garrett Cole could be the first ever $300 million pitcher, which would just be insane. I'm sorry, I can't offer $300 million to any pitcher. But Garrett Cole at 8 years, $300 million, that's $37.5 million AAV. It's a number that that Ken Rosenthal threw out there. That's just, again, an insane price tag. Steven Strasburg is going to opt out of the last 4 years and $100 million of his deal with the Nationals. Now, does he opt out and sign an extension with the Nats? I think that's the most likely scenario here. So if you're looking at something like that, I know I saw somebody say, like I mentioned to Matt, 7 years and over $200 million. Let's say 6 years, 180. All right, that's $30 million a year. And then let's throw Zach Wheeler into the mix here. Zach Wheeler did not obviously play in the postseason, but I think Wheeler could be looking at a 5-year deal worth $120 million. That's $24 million a season. I asked on Twitter, what would you prefer? Would you prefer Gerrit Cole at 8 years, $300 million, $37.5 million? Would you prefer Steven Strasburg at 6 and 180 for $30 million a year, and Zach Wheeler at 5, 120, that's $24 million a year? Almost half of you said you would prefer Steven Strasburg at those particular numbers, 48%. About a third of you said Gerrit Cole at 33%, and the remaining 20% of you said Zach Wheeler at 5 years and $120 million. And I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the numbers end up being. I'm so worried that these guys have priced themselves out of the Phillies' range. But here's the thing. We said that last year about Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, and you heard Matt mention that a second ago, too. And none of those different numbers came to fruition. So will management overall decide to hold down the level of cost for these guys? I mean, I just really wonder how aggressive, especially with Joe Girardi in the fold, and the fact that we absolutely know the Phillies need to make an impact in the starting rotation. Would they be willing to overpay? Will Matt Klentak decide to veer off from his formula and go the extra year this time around? Will he be willing to go some extra cash this time around? If it's 7 years for Strasburg, are you going seven? Are you going six for Strasburg? I mean, they've only signed one pitcher ever in franchise history to a 6-year deal, and that was when they re-signed Cole Hamels to a 6-year deal. So do you go six or seven to Strasburg? I mean, he's in his upper 30s by the time the end of that contract is over. Same thing with Gerrit Cole. You know, I mean, that's a question. If those two guys are too expensive, is Zach Wheeler enough of a consolation prize? It just seems light to me that Zach Wheeler is your big offseason pitching acquisition. But again, you know, Gerrit Cole, we keep hearing that he wants to pitch on the West Coast and pitch for his hometown Angels team. I think the Angels are going to go hard. I think the Phillies can beat any offer if they choose to, for sure. And that probably will end up winning the day. Money usually talks. Will Strasburg look to leave Washington, D.C.? It feels like I have a hard time seeing it. It just feels like he's got a home there. And I'm just not sure that he's going to leave the District of Columbia. So, I mean, you've got all these different factors into what the Phillies could do. And the qualifying offer also plays a role. Now, listen, if you sign Gerrit Cole or Steven Strasburg, then you're fine. And Rendon, too, you're fine with the qualifying offer, and you're fine with giving up your second-round draft pick for one of those guys. And that's just the way it goes. But when you're looking at some of the second-tier guys, like, you know, if you're trying to decide between Josh Donaldson and Mike Moustakas, the Braves are, of course, going to offer Josh Donaldson a qualifying offer, and he will, of course, refuse it. That means if you sign Josh Donaldson and you don't sign anybody bigger than that, you don't sign any other free agents, you're giving up a second-round pick. Or maybe you're giving up a third-round pick for Josh Donaldson. Maybe if it's a third-rounder, you end up doing it. But if Mike Moustakas is there, he cannot get a qualifying offer because he already received one last year. So he'll probably get a multi-year deal from somebody because they don't have to give up a draft pick in order to sign him. This is where the qualifying offer, and I think something in the new collective bargaining agreement, this is going to change. It's going to go away. It changed a little bit last time. They don't have the first round pick attached to these guys, but second rounders and third rounders is still a tough pill to swallow. And so I think, you know, Anthony Rendon is certainly worth a qualifying offer, but it'll be interesting to see which free agents get that attached to them. And that's going to seriously impact whether or not the Phillies have any interest in those particular players. All right, let's do our stat of the week, everybody. The game seven. Watching Game 7 should be a reminder. If you think about how long the Phillies have been in existence, they've been in existence since 1883. They've played a lot of baseball games in the playoffs. They've played a lot of playoff series. But here's a fun fact. While they have played a number of winner-take-all Game 5s, they have never played in a Game 7 in 137 years of playing Philadelphia Phillies baseball. And folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Matt Breen for coming on the podcast. Just a reminder to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon. It is at patreon.com/hittin'season. And please, just a reminder to leave a rating and a review for the Good Fight podcast feed in the Apple Podcast Store. Your input there would be most appreciated and definitely helps us move up those Apple Podcast rankings. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.